podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Unashamedly cricket. This is The Cricketer.
Hello there. It's George Dobell here on The Cricketer podcast, back for episode 2, series 1. Yes, they've given us a second episode. Who would have thought it? And I'm joined again by Philip Brown. There's no excuse for him. And Jonathan Trott. Good to see you, fellas. Firstly, we should start by saying, where in the world is everybody? I'm in Edgbaston. I've been at training today, watching England. Where are you guys?
I'm actually at the moment in Bangladesh, in Dhaka. We start our first test match, or our only test match of the series, tomorrow, 10 a.m. Bangladesh time. So do tune in.
I'm in the Edgbaston press box and looking over the ground that looks absolutely beautiful with the patches of grass, the light and the dark squares. And I've seen two training sessions today. Things are building up. Ashes are coming and I'm very excited. And it's beautiful. Birmingham, who knew?
Trotty once said that he thought Birmingham was better than Cape Town. Didn't you, Trotty?
I did say that. It got twisted into that, actually. I was asked where I'd prefer to be.
The guy did the interview, so I'm not sure twisted is the right word.
I think you're one of the people who had the as a poetic license. Were asked where I'd prefer to be, and I said, well, obviously, I'm quite a homely person. I'd prefer to be at home, and my home was in Birmingham. So that's why I said I'd prefer to be Birmingham. I got a lot of stick from my mates at school for that. But that just goes to show the headlines or the because I also know that journalists don't actually write the headlines for their articles. So that is sometimes stuff can get lost in translations. Who actually does choose the headlines for articles? Is it the editor or is it a
sub editor or an editor? Yeah.
Okay. And have you ever written a article and the headline be completely the opposite, or the editor's only read the first couple of lines or something like that?
Yeah, of course. I mean, not generally, I've been very lucky, and they've made a really good job of getting just the right amount of sort of titillation, because the idea is to draw people in to read it. But yeah, occasionally there have been absolutely horrendous headlines, which have resulted in people getting very angry. You're right.
How was training today? How were the guys looking in the nets?
Ben Stokes bowled in. That is the big thing. And he looked, I thought he looked okay. Because I think, tell me what you think, that the balance of the side doesn't really work unless he can bowl.
Well, yeah, I would say that, especially with Mo coming back into test cricket, I think as well. You need that fourth bowler option or fourth, fifth, between depending how many Stokes can bowl. And also whether you win the toss and it's, spinning in either of the first innings or so. I don't know what the pitch
looks. It looks flat, Trotty.
And I think Edgbaston will do that. I think they do want 5 days at Edgbaston. But I think that'll also suit England's style of cricket. I think hopefully they think it might spin. Obviously brings in Nathan Lyon, like we saw at the start of the previous Ashes in England. Australia played really well and came away with a victory there. So I'm fascinated to see the way England go about playing. I'm sure they'll stick to the way that they have been playing in the last year or so. And it's whether Australia can cope with that sort of style of cricket and the mentality that the England side have at the moment.
I spoke to the head of ground staff there, Gary Barwell. And he didn't reckon it would spin very much. He didn't reckon it did spin very often either. I mean, no one's played more cricket at Edgbaston than you. What do you reckon? There'll be one or two aberrational games, haven't there? 2013 Champions Trophy final.
Yeah.
But generally, it doesn't turn there a lot, does it?
No, but the one thing I would say is the weather at the moment as well. With the heat and the forecast, the way it's been. I know Gary likes to brush his wicket, the pitch quite a lot. I always, it's a sort of like a very strong sort of almost steel brush that deadens it. So he leaves the grass in on the top of the surface, but he actually kills the grass. So it just gives that nice carry and a bit of pace. And I think that's why he thinks it won't spin, because there will be a little bit of grass and it will give it that pace and carry. So he always produces good wickets. Whether they spin a little bit towards day five or four or five, Edgbaston's always a great ground, and I'm certainly going to miss the atmosphere, come the weekend.
When England win against Australia, don't they generally play on surfaces that do a little bit for the seamers? I'm struggling to think of a series which England have won, an Ashes series, which has been played on flat batting tracks.
Well, yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
Because I think that is England's strength, you know, playing county cricket, growing up in England, you learn to have a game around playing on seaming wickets or swinging conditions. Whereas if you go to Australia, that's where you play on flat tracks, and the Kookaburra ball generally doesn't do much. If you think back to 2015, where it did a little bit of Trent Bridge, and the way that England played there, I think we go to Melbourne 2010-11, where it did a little bit of just on the Boxing Day. So yeah, you are right. But I think this side, though, with England, the way that they play is a little bit different to all other England sides. And I think they want the flattest wicket because they know they can almost outgun this Australian side if, you know, the experienced players don't get runs.
I was out in the middle looking at the pitch today, and I sort of had realised how close you were to the spectators. You could see the faces of spectators quite easily. Edgbaston can be quite hostile, can't it?
Absolutely.
For opposition.
Yeah.
How does it compare with, say, I don't know, the more hostile places that you've played?
I think there are grounds that it actually suits. I think at Edgbaston, the way that the new pavilion is shaped, it goes almost straight upright. It doesn't. A lot of grounds, certainly in the subcontinent, are built for capacity, so they sort of go back at angles. So at the top almost feels quite far away from the ground, whereas Edgbaston, it feels like they're on top of you. Certainly in the Hollies as well, literally and figuratively, depending. It's always fantastic. I remember playing that Champions Trophy and actually obviously it felt like a bit of not even a home game for England. It was quite a partisan or even side. And that was a great atmosphere. Certainly the beginning of my international career, Edgbaston was under redevelopment. So all the games we played there, we didn't play many. But there was always a bit of a redevelopment of the ground. So it didn't have that full ground capacity or that feeling or that sort of buzz.
How does it compare to, say, I think Brisbane might be... do you remember the abuse you got in Brisbane?
A little bit.
In probably 2010. It was quite striking. I don't know how much I can say. If I say that they rhymed your surname Trot with vagina rot, you kind of get the picture.
Well, it was a humid, it was quite a humid and sticky day.
It was kind of unbelievable. That was the first time I'd experienced it, and I was kind of shocked by it. What did you think?
But it's not the fact that I had probably 10,000 people singing that in a rhyme. It was the fact I looked over and I saw a very proud-looking Australian. I'm not sure whether they were sort of policemen or they were sort of like stadium controllers or stadium security. But he had a big sort of Crocodile Dundee hat on, big moustache. And I looked over him going, you know, like a bit of support, you know, this can't be right. And he just started chuckling. I saw his shoulders bouncing up and down and him laughing. So that's a sort of sympathetic, sort of hospitable attitude that the Australians have. And that's what makes touring there and winning great.
It's quite a strange place, the Gabba. They're quite strict. The photographer, I think in the same series, was thrown out for popping a beach ball back to the crowd. And he was dragged out kicking and screaming from the ground. Quite harsh, the Queensland security.
But the other thing I would say with Australia, I think the country has changed from 2010-11. When we first went there, it was very much Australia in your face, quite brash. This is how we are. To now, I think they're almost the other way now with rules and regulations. And very different now, I think, the country. From the times I've been there, from the World Cup, that we had there last year and the Ashes the previous year before. There's a lot more control. It's a lot more thoughtful when it comes to tourists and the way that the Australians treat foreigners or people visiting their country.
There are a lot of rules. It's the most rule-bound place I can think of.
You speak to people who drive there. the rules on the road and the amount of traffic cameras. We think in the UK we have a lot there. It's out of control almost.
There's a sign on Melbourne trams, isn't there, Brownie, that says your behaviour has been monitored. I've always found extraordinary.
I got told, it was suggested to me not to speed years and years ago, and I thought, well, really? Like, I was in a hurry. I was actually in a hurry to get back to Sydney to see a Big Bash game on TV, and I was going well over the limit, and they went, okay, you haven't got your licence, that's another fine. $990 fine for speeding, not having my licence. That's quite severe.
Do you know, Trotty, that Philip was once a taxi driver? We're going back a long, long time. In Canberra, is that right, Philip? And
that is right, Phil. Once
in all the time he did it, 9 months or something, he got. Tell us your total tips.
Three tips. And the worst moment was, I drove someone to the airport, and the guy said, "Keep the change." And his partner went, "Rob, what are you doing? Giving away money?" And he had to say, "Oh, actually, can I have the change?" That was the low point.
I think that is also a reflection of you, though, because you are a furious, angry man. Who once, Trotty, when we were leaving Port Elizabeth, shouted at some goslings, yeah? Walked in front of the car. They were the sweetest, cutest animals on God's green earth. And Brownie got into a road rage incident with some goslings. He wound down his window and swore at them. It was ridiculous.
Deepest.
Anyway, Philip, I think you wanted to do a quiz or two. It feels like care of the community, really, this. But
I had so many people come up to me. I can't tell you how many people came up to me last week and said how much they enjoyed the quiz. It's incredible.
Have you had that a lot in Dhaka, Trotty? Have you had people?
Yeah, no, it's number one on the charts, yeah.
Yeah, but I thought I'd give you a warm-up just to get your brains going in case there's too much cricket in that. Well, this is cricket. Can you know? We saw Josh Tongue play for England last week, didn't we? And he's on the honours board at Lords. Come on, look at Trotty. He's concentrating now. I want you to name, in the last 30, 40 years playing for England, what other players are named after parts of the human body? I don't like the silence. It's as if you haven't got an answer. Come on, George. Anything?
Mark Wood.
I'm going to say no.
I haven't got a better answer, but I am going to pull you up on that because people might not have heard. You said Mark Wood. Yeah? I suppose he could have a wooden leg.
So it can't be. So it is England, just to clarify. Okay.
England. Very quiet. We don't like.
They always say the best podcasts are full of long pauses and silences. I think that's.
What counties?
You want a clue? Okay. Bowler from Nottinghamshire.
Okay.
Ball. Jake Ball.
Yes. Yeah.
Nice. Could I have...
I wasn't far
could
off.
I have Gladstone Small? Could I have Gladstone Small as in the small of your back?
Another one who moves counties a lot, but he has been Yorkshire and now he's Northamptonshire.
Side bottom.
Another bowler. And
David Willey.
Yeah, David Willey or Pete
Side
Willey.
Bottom.
Again, I'm going to have to pull you up on whether that is a part of the body.
It is. It's quite specific.
How did you do in biology at school, Trotty?
not very well.
And the last one that you probably won't get, you could have got, was Kim Barnett.
Nice.
Thanks very much. Move on.
You're listening to a new podcast from The Cricketer.
Trotty, I want to ask you about Moeen.
Mm.
I reckon that you played in his first-class debut, Champo debut.
Yeah.
You would have seen a lot of him as a young player, particularly really exciting as a young batter. Tell us what you think of the way his career's gone. Personally, I'd have said he's exceeded all expectations with the ball and actually maybe not scored as many runs as we thought he would. What do you think?
A very talented 16-year-old when I arrived at Warwickshire, 2003, and you could see straight away the natural gift and talent and style as well. He's such a stylish and elegant batsman. I would say with Mo, yeah, I would agree with your. I would agree. I always thought with the ball, probably just a little bit, but maybe with the bat in the longer format, you thought he would have maybe, with the talent that he's got and a natural hand-eye coordination. But, you know, that's the thing about careers and also the game. It evolves with regards to people's ambitions on formats. Obviously, moving counties, I'm not sure how that would have affected him with regards to his development as well. You know, I'm sure his time at Worcester has helped him immensely. So I didn't get to see him as much as I did as a youngster. I didn't, you know, it's developing away at Worcester. So I think Mo's in a great place now and will, I think, be in the most ready he is now for Test cricket. In a way, I think he would have had time away from the game, or from that format, and I think now he has added his most ready he will be to play Test cricket.
Interesting.
In a very opportunist, weird way, because I think he's come full circle in his career.
And what is relaxed, knows his game.
Yeah. I often think sometimes when things happen last minute, certainly with the character that Mo is, he's so relaxed, so chilled. I think that's when he'll be at his best. I think if Mo had time and he'd played previously test matches and perhaps wasn't in the best of form, I know how much pride he takes in his performance and his contributions. I think going in fresh and being almost the last minute, I think will be beneficial to him and the way he plays the game, also the way he thinks about the game. Just go in fresh and play. There's no real, it's almost like a free hit, if you like, a little bit.
That's exact expression that he used today, funnily enough. And I agree with you. That does seem to be his mentality. He seems extremely relaxed.
Yeah.
As if it's just an opportunity to do something one more time he thought he'd never do again.
I haven't spoken to him for a bit. I haven't texted him or anything like that. And I was thinking about it today. I saw some headlines. I saw he did press today. And that's, I was like, I've got just the feeling I got about it all. And the way that he is, he probably would never put pressure on himself to play test cricket again. I think the last test match he played was actually at Edgbaston, wasn't it? After the first test.
No, he did get dropped after that, but he came back, didn't he? He played in India.
Okay. I can't recall that.
And he played against India as well in September 21. But there's no reason why you would necessarily remember that. He's taking the day off tomorrow, funnily enough, to go. He's going to go pick up his OBE.
Okay.
But even that, in a funny way, is so different to the England regime that you were developed in, particularly the Andy Flower, which, I mean, it was brilliant. Those were glorious days to be watching English cricket. They really were, and I'm full of respect for Andy Flower in lots and lots of ways. But coaching's changed, yeah? And that tough, never give anyone an inch, work hard, I don't know, accept that it's a struggle, accept it's going to be tough, grit your way through it. Attitude has been replaced entirely by chill. Do you want to play golf? Have another beer. Hasn't it? I mean, it seems very, very different. Is that just the way that coaching has to be now?
I have a bit of a thing with cricket or theory with cricket. I think it flip-flops a lot from one extreme to the other. They almost say, well, this is, you get these times where this strict, this regime, this fitness, this constant testing and evaluation and the analytic side of the game. That'll happen, and then suddenly someone will come along and will do it completely opposite, and then everyone will change to that method. And so if you spoke to Andy Flower now, I think it'd be very different because he's had time in franchise cricket now. So maybe if we had got the balance right, or maybe at times Andy himself had been a little more flexible, I think he would agree with that as well. May have been able to prolong the life of that side and prolong the success it had.
Yeah, look, I'm not criticising Andy here because I know that...
No, absolutely.
England won a World Cup under him in 2010 and, you know, won the Ashes away. All sorts of amazing experiences. But I think he would say, and one of the good things about him is he's continued to learn and evolve.
Mm.
But one of the reasons I ask is that partly about player power that you sort of can't criticise players anymore because they'll get you sacked?
I think that comes with all this. I think that's evolved with everything else around the game and society, social media. There's so many other influential things out there, you know, things that influence people's thoughts, and the decision making. So the other thing I would say about that is Andy has now gone on to franchise cricket, and he's just as successful with a different mentality. Very rarely now do you see Andy Flower not get to the knockout stage, or I'm saying the eliminator or the semifinals or the finals of whatever franchise he's in. And so that says to me he's evolved. He's kept his core principles, but he also knows when to perhaps take his foot off. Whereas in the past, I think he coached very similar to how he played at times. And that I'm not, and that I'm not critical of that either, because I think a lot of times, and when I've been developing as a coach, a lot of the time you people say, you know, you can't coach, don't coach the same way that you played, because then you'll be one dimensional. I think sometimes if you look at the way England are playing their test cricket now, I'm pretty sure it's exactly how Brendan McCullum played his cricket.
I think you're right.
And so there are times when that suits with the personnel that the England side have, probably one of the most talented sides, led by one of the most dynamic players that's ever played the game, with probably one of the best batsmen that has ever played for England, with the best bowler that's probably ever played for England. You can then, you know, find different ways of playing the game. Whereas when Andy took over, there we were seventh or eighth, and climbed to the top through that sheer, you know, willpower and determination that he had to change the mindset of, you know, English cricket.
If they lose this series, say they have a shocker, and I don't think they will, but say they lost 5-0, there'll be a reversal, won't there? There'll be a reaction, and we'll go back the other way a little bit. We'll say there was, I don't know, too much leeway, too much golf. Don't you think?
Yeah. No, but I understand. But don't forget now, if there wasn't social media and if there wasn't all those sorts of things, would you know about the guys playing so much golf?
Yes.
How? How would you know?
I'd like hanging around golf courses.
Well, you're going to go to Scotland, dude. You go to Scotland.
No, I think you would, Trotty.
Nah.
Trotty, I think you would. I mean, because Brownie and I have been on a lot of tours and seen you guys training. And these guys don't train so much. They're just, you know, okay, I'll give you an example. We went to New Zealand and there was 1 4-day warm-up game. Well, straight away, I reckon you guys would have had more than that. Immediately, they cut it 2 days and then it was under lights. And England, the lights come on the first day of the warm-up game and England decided to stop playing. And I asked Brendan about it. And he said, well, we don't really want to lose players to lose confidence for batting under lights, which is reasonable enough. But I thought, in the first test, you're going to have to. First test starts, they bat first. I remember saying to someone in the press box, well, you're going to have to bat under lights now. No, they declare at tea. It's just everything's different. And they didn't have net sessions. They didn't have training sessions. I reckon I saw Ben Stokes bat in the net once on that tour. And I think I probably went to every training session. So it has changed, and there's much more emphasis on taking the pressure off. And it's neither. I'm definitely not saying it's wrong. Who could argue with the results? But I do think it's changed, yeah.
I find it quite interesting. From that point of view, what you said, I haven't really followed closely on the training schedules and all that sort of stuff, or the amount they train. But I find it fascinating, the model of it, and trying to apply it to everyday life or, for example, the business world. If you're a boss of a company and you said to your employees, I don't really care whether you guys sell or don't sell, but I want you to go out there and do it in your own style and enjoy it and create memories in the way that you do things, you might end up with a sort of Wolf of Wall Street movie again. But I tell you what, it'd be interesting to see if that success would apply in the business or in a different other walks of life, I suppose, where you take the pressure off. Nowadays, there's so much scrutiny, there's so much focus from the outside and monitoring of things and analyzing. If we take away all of that and you just play the game, how England side are playing the game, if you live your life or work in the industry, whatever industry you're in, I think there might actually be a bit of something in that for other people in the way that they go about their everyday business.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting, because it is quite different from that Australian tour,
yeah,
where they kept on getting in trouble for going out for drinks.
Well, yeah. Can you imagine a boss or someone now in a sales, whatever, in a sales sort of marketing or whatever, And their trade is to sell things. And you say, I don't care how much you sell, but I want you, when you go out with the clients, to have a great time, create memories, and make sure that you make, and it doesn't matter if you win or lose.
Sorry, I wish you were my boss.
Exactly. But that's what I'm saying. So if I say to you, George, I just want you to write your article.
Don't worry about it. Make memories. Don't worry about expenses.
There we go.
I love the way you're thinking. I think this is inspirational. Right, we ought to bring Philip in. He's chomping at the bit. A dog, a mongrel, trying to get out. Philip, did you want to do your quiz, your other quiz? I don't know. What did you want to say, Philip? I could see you anxiously trying to talk.
Well, I'm always anxious to join in with fantastic conversation, but we could do the quiz now. Right. So this time, is called Strike Rate is My Mate. Anyway, something like that. So this is about knowledge, right? Remember, it's 1-0 to Trotty. This is about knowledge of test match strike rates in careers. Do you know yours, Jonathan?
The test match. Don't know.
Test match strike rate.
I don't know. I'm joking.
No, it's getting more like, it'd be more like 48-50, isn't it?
I think it might be lower than that. But I like the way you're thinking. It's very positive. Anyway, it doesn't matter. You can look up yours later. This isn't all about you. We've got the... So what I was going to see is who is better at that. I think I know who's going to be better at this. But anyway, we're going to have a little competition, see how close you can get to guessing a test match strike rate for a whole career. So we're going to start with... Well, George, you can have the choice. That's how much preparation I put in. Who do you want to guess the strike rate of? Do you want to guess Graham Gooch or Jeffrey Boycott strike rate per 100 balls?
Jeffrey Boycott.
Okay. So, Trotty, you're going to go first. What's Jeffrey Boycott's strike rate? Test match career.
43
is gone for. George, what do you want to go for?
Well, can I just say lower? Because that's you basically want to be Bruce Forsyth, don't you?
To the nearest number.
What did you say, 43? I should say 42. I was going to say 36, 37. So I'm going to say 42 then. Just going to go a bit lower.
One idiotic thing to do. That might be one of the most stupidest things you've ever done. Although
there's competition for that accolade.
There is competition for that. So you've gone 42. The answer is 36. So you're 6 off and Trotty is 7 off. So,
well, wait, I think I misunderstood the rules because I did literally say 36.
No, but I also said, what's your number? And you said 42.
I didn't realize. Okay, fair, fine. Is that the end of the quiz today?
No. No, there's two more. You've got a choice. Trotty, you've got a choice. Do you want to go for Ricky Ponting's strike rate or Steve Smith's strike rate?
Ponting.
Okay, you're going for Ponting. Good idea. And who goes first this time? It's George goes first. Who do you want for Ponting's strike rate? As quick as you can.
56.
56. And Trotty?
52.
Well, George is close, so it's 58. So George, 2 off, and Trotty is 6 off. This is good, isn't it? So for the last one, this is the last one. He's not playing this week. The country's not playing this week, but they were here last week. India. Virendra Sehwag.
Oh.
George, strike rate in his test career.
66.
Take your time on this, Jonathan. Maybe go 80 or something like that. What do you want, Jonathan?
I'm not going 80.
What do you want?
Virendra Sehwag.
Trust me this time.
Virendra Sehwag, strike rate 70.
82.
That's incredible.
No.
That is incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, really good. I can't help thinking Trotty had a wee bit of help there.
No.
Jeffrey Boycott strike rate 36 test matches and Virendra Sehwag 82. Now, I'll mull on that for a minute. But thank you. Trotty's won that.
So, yeah, well done. Trotty, do you know that Brownie asked me to write the foreword for his book and then rejected it because it was too abusive?
I'll tell you an interesting story about Virendra Sehwag. I was fortunate enough to play against him. I remember him hitting Tim Bresnan, just before lunch, we played at Ahmedabad, the old stadium before they built it into the colossal ground it is now. We only picked one spinner, and Tim Bresnan was our third seamer. He hit Tim Bresnan for six over long on just before lunch. And we thought we may have got our selection wrong here. He was then caught, I think, at like a long on against Swanee, Graham Swan, just after lunch. But the other thing, the most fascinating thing for me, that series is, I'll never forget, he used to stand at slip and whistle and sing when he used to get bored. If we had a bit of a partnership going, he used to just sing, and then he'd stop as the runner was bowling in, you'd hit the ball, and then he'd start whistling and singing again in between balls. Him and Dhoni used to sing and sort of whistle behind the stumps.
Amazing. And of course, you won that series, which is an incredible achievement. I mean, you look back, I don't think that India have lost their since. Johnny,
yes.
We've got to ask you about the first test in particular.
Okay.
How do you see it going?
The Ashes or the one here in Bangladesh?
No, the first test, Edgbaston test. I'm sorry, I mean the Ashes.
Okay. I think it's going to be fascinating. And I think the toss will play a bit of a part. And I think England will win.
Okay, but England have to play the spinner, do you think? Do you think they have to play Moen?
Yes. I do think it'll spin with this heat and the way that it's been the previous couple of weeks.
And what about Mark Wood? Would you play the pace of Mark Wood?
So either, what are the feet? It depends if you're going to play Anderson and Broad.
It's probably Wood or Broad.
Really?
You're probably going to play Robinson and Anderson as the first two, and then it's Broad or Wood.
Oof. So this again, England made this mistake the first test match at Brisbane where they didn't play Broadie.
So you'd be tempted to play Broad.
Broad, Anderson for me, depending on who's bowling well, if Robinson or Wood. For me, you've got to play. Every time you bet against Stuart Broad, he comes out on top. No. For me, Anderson and Broad.
That's true, but you'd ideally love to have the pace of Wood, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but again, Australia don't worry about pace. Australians aren't affected by pace.
That's very true.
We keep going on about pace.
That's true. That's one thing they play great. They play pace great. That is true. That's a really good point. Is this the first series we've ever seen where they might have, I mean, only if Stokes is not fully fit, but Australia might have the better all-rounder?
I don't know about that. I don't know. No.
Well, I don't think they have if Stokes is fit, but Cameron Green looks a special cricketer, doesn't he?
He does look special cricketer, but I think Ben Stokes is more special.
Yeah, fair. Well, particularly if he's fit.
Exactly.
They're both lovely men, but Cameron Green asked me to take a picture of him and the mace the other day after their victory in the World Test Championship final. And then he insisted he take the camera from me and take a photo of me with the mace. Now, isn't that a lovely gesture? I didn't really want one, but I've got one.
It's unusual. Do you know what? I think we've probably talked enough. More than enough. So we should, you know what? I don't even think we're going to bring in our special guest. We've got Andy Lloyd just waiting. He's not really waiting. I pre-recorded it. And he was absolutely fascinating about his test experiences. We've got Nick Compton desperate to come on. He messaged me after the last show. Why didn't you ask me on? And we will, because I've got his book here and it's terrific. So, but we're not going to have time for any of these things because we've talked too much about Philip Brown and Goslins.
You did.
It's a terrible use of our time, really. Yeah, I feel bad about that. Right, I guess we should all say goodbye. Any last thoughts, Philip?
No, I think that's it. I've really enjoyed it. And thanks to all the people that came up and said positive things about the quiz, because I did appreciate that. I put a lot of preparation time into that. Thank you and good night.
Chotty, good luck with the test match. We'll be keeping a lookout on those scores. And
yeah, thanks very much.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we'll look forward to seeing you next time.
The Cricketer with George DeBell and Jonathan Trott is a Sportverse production. Check thecricketer.com for future episodes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Social Podcast Network.